Welcome in to the Pick Aside podcast here on the Pick Aside feed of the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you find your podcast. It is U.S. Open week. We are heading out to Oakmont, and that means one thing and one thing only. I've got my golf compadre with me here. Every single major, we break down our favorite golf bets of the week. It's Charlie Bevins with us here on the Pick Aside podcast. How about it, Chardog? I think we had a pretty good week last time out. Obviously, we didn't hit the winner, but we kind of told you, like, listen, Scotty, like, you can bet it if you want, but you're not going to get great odds on it. You can take your plus 450 and run with it. But outside of that, it was a pretty good PGA championship for the both of us.
Yeah, this even more so than the last one, too. It's almost like, all right, here's Scotty, and then we'll kind of just talk about everybody else, like who's going to finish behind him. But yeah, not terrible. I mean, we can revisit the Sepp Straka thing because he's now burned us twice. But for the most part, I think going back to the Masters, we've been okay this year because I think in totality, a lot of the picks haven't worked out, but we've gotten some of our longer shot ones.
For sure.
To get in the cup, the proverbial cup, if you will.
There you go. So as we look at Oakmont as a golf course, I don't know if you've heard this, Charlie, that rough, man. It's about a foot high at this point. You're losing people in the roughs at this point.
Are people saying that it's really tall and it's really difficult?
Oh my goodness, Charlie. No, but like seriously, like it's a joke about how much people have talked about it. I've seen people on Twitter go like, I need to mute people.
We've reached like mythological status.
Yeah, like you think the Loch Ness Monster is going to appear out of the Oakmont rough at this point. But I think it's going to be a real factor. Like, it's raining all week leading into the tournament, so that's only going to let that grass grow a little bit more. Maybe it softens up the greens, but the greens are rolling at a 15 right now, like a 14.5, 15 on the stint meter. Like, this could be a very, very difficult tournament, and I haven't seen any odds on, like, a winning score yet, but if you gave me the option to bet over par or under par, I'd go over par.
I believe Dustin Johnson won this at a 4-under, but I think he won it by like 4 or 5 strokes. Like, I think everybody else behind him. I could be wrong on that, but yeah, dude. And not only that, but the bunkers themselves aren't easy either. Like, I remember LACC, that winning score of that was extremely low. Like, Wyndham Clark just, I think.
Yeah, and they were pissed about it.
I think Ricky shot a 62 on the first day or something like that. Like, insane stuff, but I remember hearing about the grass for that one in the rough, but those were wide fairways. Those guys were able to get out of the sand pretty easily. This is from Justin Ray, and I promise it's the only Justin Ray stat I'm going to, because I'm always citing him. But he said, when you combine the field performance of the last two U.S. Opens at Oakmont, 10 different holes have yielded a scrambling percentage of less than 40%. So if you fall behind, you're probably screwed in this environment.
Well, for context, too, like the time before DJ won it, it was Angel Cabrera in 2007. He won it at plus 5.
Yeah.
So, like, this is going to humble a lot of the field here. All right, so I think we've got our theme for the day is hitting fairways is going to be our guiding light as we try to make our picks for this tournament.
I think so. I think it's all about driver accuracy this week. It's not the longest course for a U.S. Open, so you...
Except for some par threes.
There's a 300-yard par 3 on there.
People pulling driver. Yep.
Yeah, so, like, there is... But this isn't going to be a bomb and gouge environment, I don't think. I think you're going to actually have to play with a little bit of finesse off the tee.
Yeah. So, I do want to put some historical context behind the Scotty number, all right? Because I'm not going to give you Scotty Scheffler as a bet that you should play in this tournament. It's just... Come on. The odds right now are plus 275. It's the lowest.
You don't want to bet on the Globetrotters?
It's the lowest it's been for a U.S. Open since Tiger in 2009 when he was plus 275 or shorter in every single major for the year. Tiger was plus 175, if you'll believe it, at that U.S. Open. And the funniest part about that year in 2009, he didn't win a single major that year, but he was 275 or shorter on every single tournament.
So that must have been the year after the Rocco Media playoff?
Yes, it was the year after. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I mean, we always talk about Scotty in the context of Tiger and for good reason and saying, like, dude, like, this is Tiger stuff we're seeing. now anybody can, and a lot of that is kind of in the data golf stuff and the strokes gain. Now anybody can go look at that and be like, oh, he's in the same world as Tiger when it comes to our expectations for him winning these things.
I think stats are one thing, because stats can be skewed and stuff based off of the years that you're playing.
Hostages.
But I do think that the gambling odds kind of give you context of when you're especially in an individual sport like golf, maybe not as much in team sports, but in an individual sport, I think it does. It shows you how dominant he is, Scotty is. And he has a chance to win back-to-back majors here. He has a chance to put himself one away from finishing off the career slam. And he's as young as he is, too. Like, so listen, if you made me pick all things equal who's winning this golf tournament, I think you and I are in agreement. It's Scottie Scheffler. Although I will say the greens could provide him with a little bit of a disadvantage, because putting not one of his strengths, and the greens are rolling the way that they are right now.
It does kind of come and go for him, it seems like, because I remember the putting all came together last year, right around the Arnold Palmer and that Florida swing. And then he didn't really do all that much at Pinehurst last year. So it can definitely come and go, but yeah, man, we're talking about, so, you know, a Goliath right now in comparison to everybody else.
All right, you want to get to it?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with some simple stuff. We'll get to our top 10s, 20s, and outrights in a second, but you and I love a good make-miss-the-cut bet. I've got a couple of those, and then I've got one prop that I want to throw your way as well. All right?
All right.
So let's start with some make-and-miss-of-the-cuts. What do you got here?
So I got two miss-cuts for you. I got Tyrrell Hatton at plus 132.
Interesting.
Now, Tyrrell Hatton played pretty well last year. I think he was T19 last year. This is a situation I'm kind of just betting against his temperament. There's a handful of guys who are very prone to just kind of ejecting and taking themselves out of it mentally, and Tyrrell Hatton, I think, is one of those guys. He emceed at Wingfoot back in 2020. That's a course that presents a lot of similar problems for golfers. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get a feel for how these LIV guys are going to do, because he always ends up doing pretty well at the Masters, but it's a little bit hit or miss for events for him in these other major events outside of that. The other one I actually do like is Brooks plus 100 to miss the cut.
Yeah.
Wake me up when he shows up for one of these things.
Yeah, it's been a while at this point. I think he's kind of riding off of that PGA.
He is coasting off the reputation of a guy who just wakes up for majors and doesn't really care about anything else because he got that one PGA a couple years ago. He's missed both cuts this year. He missed it at the PGA and he missed it at Augusta, and I don't really see how that turns around for him. And I feel like I've done okay about these, these fading stars when it comes to missing the cut, because I gave you Dustin Johnson last time, who is I think minus 130 to miss it this time.
Yeah, last time was
as the defending champ at Oakmont.
Yeah, I actually am joining you on that Brooks bet. That's one.
You're at plus money right now.
If you're giving me plus money on Brooks to miss the cut, because it could get so frustrating Thursday that he doesn't give a shit at all by Friday. So I like the Brooks bet there. I'm tailing you on that. I've actually got three like big names that I'm going to fade in this. So I've got Brooks at plus 105. I've got Jordan Spieth at plus 125, 86th on the tour in fairway percentage.
Ooh, and that's not good.
His game is just so inconsistent. We saw how he completely flopped the PGA Championship. And if you couldn't play the PGA Championship well, you sure as hell, I don't think, are going to play very well here at the U.S. Open, a much more difficult golf course than what we saw. So I like that one. And then here's an intriguing one I'm going to throw your way. And if this one hits, it doesn't matter if my other two hit or not. I'm going to give you Bryson, plus 340 to miss the cut. He is one of the highest favorites to make the cut, but I'm actually going to throw it your way that he could miss the cut because of the bomb and gouge nature of his game. If he's just going to try to put it out there, and that, like, I think he's got the putter to play well at this tournament. I think the T2 green approach that he has does not suit this golf tournament well. Will he change his game? Potentially. He could go out there and play a completely different game, but I just don't know how effective is that version of Bryson DeChambeau, and what happens when things do go a little bit errant, and you're going to give me plus 340 to hit it. Like, I'm going to take Bryson to miss the cut.
on the Bryson thing, you told me about this earlier today, and I kind of like was a little taken aback by it. But when you think about it, the iron play has been really inconsistent for him. That's what cost him the Sunday at the Masters this year, is because he just didn't have it between, with his irons. And in this kind of environment, yeah, his short game is what is winning him these tournaments. Like, mm-hmm. I know we all think, and rightfully so, we think of Bryson as this huge heavy hitter, long driver, and he is that still.
For
but
sure.
The reason he won at Pinehurst last year was because he putted his absolute ass off.
And because Rory threw up on
and
himself.
And of course,
too.
Rory had like an all-time choke in a career full of all-time chokes. The other part about Bryson is he was so good scrambling last year. When he would take himself out of it, he would just get, 18 was probably one of the best scrambles you could ever see, the way he got out of that sand trap and put it like three feet away from the cup.
For sure.
You're not going to be able to do that this year. And while I don't think I'm fully on board with betting him to miss the cut, the case for it, I think, is a lot clearer than you might think upon first glance.
For sure. No, I'm right there with you on that. All right. Do you got any make the cuts?
So I don't have any make the cuts. There was one more that I just kind of had as a general note. I don't know what to do with Rory. And I kind of want to bet him to miss the cut. I have a hard time believing that he's going to miss the cut at the Canadian Open and turn around and miss the cut here at the U.S. Open. But what is with this driver thing, man?
It's between the ears with him.
It's the ears or it's the equipment. Either way, there's something off with him when he's coming off the tee right now, because he can't find a fairway to save his life. He couldn't at Quail, at Rory Country Club, Quail Hollow.
And he hasn't in the practice rounds
either.
He
better figure it out this weekend. Otherwise, like, he's going to be a non-factor if he just can't find it in the fairway for a guy who is so damn good off the tee. That's such a big part of his game. That's how he won the Masters, was because he'd set himself up for those eagles on those par fives.
Yeah.
If he's not controlling the driver, which he hasn't shown an ability to do recently, I don't know how he stays in contention this weekend.
It's one of those things with Rory where I get it. This course and everyone who's played their practice rounds and everything that we've seen this week too, this course has kicked everyone's ass. It's just kind of a question to me of, all right, where is Rory? Like, the course, he did his practice round. There are all the reports out of it. He didn't play well. And how much of that is Rory got his ass kicked by the golf course, but like, where is he on the spectrum of like, okay, if Rory did this, what does that mean for someone like Tom Kim, right? Like, was Rory bad, or is this just how difficult the golf course is?
Yeah, it's so hard to measure because right now he is just playing bad. So like, this is either, this is either just a place that's going to give all these guys a really hard time, or he is playing closer to a Tom Kim than he is to a Scottie Scheffler. What a drive-by on Tom Kim there. But I don't think I'm going to get there fully on betting him to miss the cut. At the end of the day, this is Rory McIlroy, but the trajectory that he's been on is the opposite of what I thought would happen. I thought he'd get that monkey off his back at Augusta, and then it all of a sudden unlocked this even new chapter in Rory's career, right?
Yeah.
Because it was the hot start, the drought, and then I thought it was going to be like, okay, yeah, he's winning majors again. That's not been the case. He's barely played in anything since the PGA, and B, like, he just missed a cut in Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, he's not coming
sometimes
in.
Sometimes it's good.
Sometimes
it's good, but he didn't play the Memorial. He's missed a couple of elevated events over the course of the year, including the Heritage right after he had his win at the Masters. Like, this is to me the difference between the year that we saw Scottie have and the year that Rory is setting up for right now.
I agree.
It's a very different, because Scottie was like playing golf, and it was kind of like a get hot, stay hot type of deal with him. Rory's just been in and out. And I wonder if the long absences and just not having that like fire of competition over the course of a couple of weeks.
One thing about the confidence that he got.
It's almost like he got burnt out by the game.
Yeah, and I mean, justifiably so, I guess, but I don't know. I don't really know what to do with Rory this weekend.
Yeah. All right, so my make the cut, I've only got one. I'm going with Mr. Steady, a guy who I think could possibly win this tournament too. Justin Rose, minus 120 is where I'm going to go with this. I know his metrics don't necessarily add up to an overwhelmingly like positive thought for what he could be at this, but he's won the U.S. Open before, not at Oakmont, but it is his only major tournament win. And he's also played U.S. Opens here before as well. I get that he got cut in 2016. In 2017, though, he finished tied for 10th in what was only his third U.S. Open at the time. So I think that Justin Rose, even though his game isn't there, he's just one of those wily veterans who can navigate a golf course. And because he's been around this thing for so long, he's still in good physical shape, too. Like, it's not like...
I mean, he just had a playoff with Rory in the Masters.
Yeah, like, it's not like he's like Phil or Tiger, where there's like clearly physical limitations, even though he's one of the older guys out there. To me, like, Justin Rose still has that physical ability, and he's put together a couple of... He always puts together a couple of good performances at majors. And, like, last year, he had a couple of top tens. He's already got a runner-up finish this year at the Masters that you alluded to. Like, he's just kind of... still showing that he can chug along and do this. And this feels like one of those ones where Justin Rose could go out there and have a nice little week. I think just knows the course better than a lot of these people.
Yeah, I think something that I'm going to be keeping my eye on is like how these guys, you know, just mentally how they hold up. You know, this is going to be a probably lean on experience kind of course, like a guy who's seen a lot of golf, seen a lot of different golf courses, which is fits the bill for Justin Rose. I mean, when you are sending it in the rough on four straight holes and you have to dig your way out every time and you're messing up your birdie opportunities, like, how are you going to handle that? I think Justin Rose is the kind of guy who's going to be able to take that in stride and keep it, you know, keep it going, keep his game sharp and not let it get to him too much. And I think that's going to be something that, like I said, I'm going to be keeping an eye on to see how these guys handle the inevitable frustrations are going to come with this course.
All right. Any other make the cuts you got?
That's all I got.
All right. I've got one nationality prop for
okay.
you. We're going to go top Asian, my people.
Here, there you go.
Char Dog. I am going to go with Sung Jae-im at 4-1 to be the top Asian. The only guys with shorter odds than him, Hideki Matsuyama, Siwoo Kim. But we're going to go with the fairway theme here. He is 7th in fairways hit among tour players, and if you're going to give me 4-1 on that for him to be the top Asian golfer, I really do like the odds I'm getting there on a Sung Jae-im.
Yeah, I think fairway finders are, again, that's what we're going to be focusing on. I mean, he missed a cut at Quail, but we know what the problem with Quail is. If you're not a bomber, you're going to have a really hard time there. He's a guy who, as I've talked about him before, is just a guy who is always around. Like, he's always in the picture. He always lingers around at Augusta. He's got a bunch of top 25s this year. He got a T11 at the RBC. What did he end up finishing? Yeah, he finished T5 at the Masters. So he's somebody who knows how to rise up in these big events, these big spots. And, you know, like, I think just these steady golfers are going to be the ones that rise above everybody else. And that, to me, is definitely Sung Jae-im.
I feel like he's good for a top 10. I'm saying this without doing any research on it. I could pull it up right in front of me right now, but I feel like he's good for a top 10 once a year at a major.
Yeah, that feels right. I don't know why that it just does, but like anecdotally, I think you raise a good point.
Now I need to look this up because, watch, I'll pull it up and I'll be like, he's never top 10 ever before. he's top 5 at the Masters, top 7 last year at the Open Championship, so maybe he's burned his top 10 for the year. But I just need him to be the best of the Asians out there. So, I'm going to go with Sung Jae-im.
All right, I like that.
All right, any other props before we get into finishing positions?
No, let's get into the finishing.
All right. Pretty much all of mine, I've got three guys, and I'm betting two of them across the board. And I'll probably end up doing an outright and a top 10 on the other guy. But I guess let's start with outrights and then we can get to top 10s and top 20s because my logic for the top 10s and 20s are going to be pretty much the same as my outrights. And why don't we start with the bang here?
All right. I mean, the outrights, like, I have a really hard time picking not Scottie Scheffler just because of this plus 270. And, like, I don't feel good about giving out somebody who, like, I was thinking about, I'm like, yeah, can Bryson defend this? Probably. But Scottie Scheffler's probably going to win, so probably not. I've thought about John Rahm. I feel better about my top five, so why don't you go ahead and actually give some of your
picks. I thought about Rahm, too. He hasn't been great in terms of his fairway accuracy, his driving accuracy on LIV. But I do think his game as a whole should, like, in the U.S. Open, we saw a LIV guy win it last year, and Rahm looked really good until those final couple holes at the PGA Championship. It looked like he had a chance to win that thing at Quail.
He looked really good at Augusta after Thursday.
Yeah, he really did. And he honestly had a chance if he has, like, an average Thursday round for John Rahm. What was he, like, 5 over, I think? That first day.
He was terrible.
And he came all the way back and made the cut, and he put together a nice little Sunday, too. All right. My outright, I'll go shortest to longest odds here. Colin Morikawa at 25-1. I'm doing it again. I'm taking the cheese. I feel like I do it all the time. But I think his game is perfect for this course. He's number one on the tour in fairway percentage. He's fifth in strokes gained tee to green on the tour. And he's a guy who's won at a major before. And Colin Morikawa, like, the game, I'm hoping this is where he kind of has that renaissance to his career. Kind of like what we saw with Brooks a little bit. And injuries haven't played as much of a factor with Colin as they clearly did with Brooks. And obviously the flip to LIV, certainly a factor too. But he's just one of those steady golfers. The thing to me is Thursday is going to tell the story for Colin Morikawa. If he's not in it on Thursday, he's not going to be in it at all.
That's what happened at the Masters this year.
I'm not going to lie. Like, if you're not in it, they always say, like, oh, you can't win a golf tournament on the first day, but you can lose it. I feel like you kind of have to, if you're not in, like, the top 20 on day one, probably not catching people.
This is going to be a last man standing kind of tournament.
I think. Yeah, like, you're going to see, like, 80 guys knock themselves out of contention on Thursday. And then you'll see, like, another, like, 20 on Friday. Yeah, I think it's kind of going to be like King of the Mountain, King of the Rough, King of the Tall Rough.
I think I'm going to join you on this one, to be completely honest, at 25-1. Colin Morikawa is the number one course fit golfer at this tournament for Oakmont. It's been a very weird year for him. He was playing so well going into Augusta, and then he just kind of flopped when he got there. I mean, we were talking about him kind of, not the way we talk about Rory and Scotty, but in that next group of guys. He is, like you said, the number one in fairways hit on tour. He's the second most accurate driver on the tour. Again, this isn't Quail, where it's a bomber's paradise. That's going to play into his hands, the fact that this is very much a finesse-style tournament. Yeah. Approach is going to be super important here. How are you? Are you staying?
And he's fucking elite.
He's he's sixth in strokes gained approach. And to me, if you're going to survive this kind of tournament, this kind of field, this kind of course, not field. If you're going to be that last man standing or be in contention to be that last man standing, it's just going to be about your ability to consistently find the fairway and keep yourself on track. And with a guy like Colin Morikawa, who is so good at finding that fairway and is so good in his approach, yeah, I had it written down for a top 20 because I'm just still a little squeamish based on kind of what's happened a little bit recently. But at 25-1 with this kind of profile, again, the number one course fit for Oakmont, that's something I can get behind. And I might start adding a little bit more Colin Morikawa to my card.
Love it. Love it. So I'm going to also put in on him for a top 10 to a plus 180. Next, I'm taking the bait again.
Oh, no.
I found my new Joaquin Niemann. And his name is Sepp Straka.
Oh, my goodness. See, I have it written down in my burn book, and should I talk to you about putting Sepp Straka in the burn book? Because I got burned by him at Augusta. You got burned by him at PGA. But state your case, because I can understand how you landed
it's
on
a
this.
A lot of the same shit as Colin Morikawa.
Yeah.
Fourth strokes gained tee to green, eighth in fairway percentage, 17th in putting. He may even be a little bit of a better fit based off of the putting than Morikawa. But yeah, at 50-1, to have guys that fit this profile the way that they do, I'm going to take Sepp. I'm going to put him in a top 10 at 3-1. I'm going to put him in a top 20 at plus 130. It's a dangerous game I'm playing because who knows? He'll find a little bit of rough, and then all of a sudden he's out of it on Thursday. But I'm rolling with Sepp. He's been dog shit in like the early portions of majors, but hopefully this is like
such bad starts.
Yeah, but it's like if he doesn't get off to those bad starts, then maybe he like can actually win one of these things. But if he can get rid of those Thursday scaries, like he's got the game to do it.
He's been playing well too, just even beyond like what we've been saying. Like he finished solo third at Memorial.
Won the Truist.
Everything about his profile and everything about what the data golf suggests and all the strokes gained and all that suggests he should be very much in the mix for this tournament. I just don't know if it's a mental thing with him or if, like you said, he gets the yips when he approaches that first tee. What it is, there's just something that has happened to him in these two. And, like, not just, oh, he barely missed the cut. Like, he, like, blows up on Thursday.
Yeah.
At these
78
these
at the Masters,
majors.
73 at the PGA.
So, I think I'm going to, you said he's plus 130 top 20. I think I'm going to end up having that in there.
All right.
I hate you for talking me into it, but
love it.
I was because it's one of those things where like it's the nerds versus the scouts, right? Where you're like everything suggests that it's gonna happen. You might as well just try to be there when it happens, and then you know the old scouts are like, doesn't have it mentally, doesn't have it upstairs. So I don't know. I think I'm just gonna have to trust the numbers once again.
I feel like okay, I'm at this point with three guys right now, four guys, I should say. Where I will be pissed off if I don't have money on them for their first major win. Tommy Fleetwood.
Can I guess the other two?
Yeah.
Sepp Straka and Ludvig.
Yes, and then there's one more.
Their first major. Who is it?
Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
Those are the four guys. I will be very... I mean, with Tommy, it's his first PGA
Tommy
tournament
just like,
win.
What the hell? Like, he's not...
He's never won a PGA tournament
this seems
before.
Seems statistically like, impossible.
Yeah, so those are the guys that I definitely want to be in on the fun for, even if it's at a live number. Last guy I've got for an outright, and then across the board I'm taking him to, Aaron Rye, 100-1. Guy who's played he's had probably his best year on the tour this year, but he is currently second in fairway percentage. And if you're going to give me in a fairway finder tournament, the number two guy in fairway percentage at 100-1, I have to get involved. I have no choice but to get involved. I know he's been cut at the last couple. It's been a little bit of a difficulty getting off the ground and running, but top 20 at the PGA, top 30 at the Masters, like he's gotten this big tournament feel. And I just think that this is a extreme long shot. I'm in this more for the top 10 and top 20. He's plus 550 to top 10, plus 230 to top 20. I look at his game. I just think it sets up very nicely for this. So Aaron Rye, 100-1, my last one I've got for you.
I'm glad you brought up Aaron Rye because I have him in a top 20
beautiful.
At plus 210. Like you said, hasn't been awesome for him lately, but... He was T19 at Pinehurst last year, like sneaky top 20 in his U.S. Open day. I believe that was his first one. The most accurate driver on tour. Like you said, he has second most fairways hit. This is all about those guys who are able to just kind of control the ball. And I think he's the kind of guy who, again, stays on pace, just keep hitting those fairways. Absolutely somebody who can finish pretty high just by virtue of hanging around and not falling apart.
And this could be big for Ryder Cup implications.
I just pulled up his Ryder Cup.
Yeah, he's 17th right now on points. Obviously, he can be a captain's pick, but yeah.
I mean, a good showing here. All of a sudden, he's looking more and more like one of those captain's picks. It's an interesting like collection between that 7 and 10. Like you got Robert McIntyre in there, Matt Wallace, you got Nicklas Højgaard. Nikolaj Højgaard. Aaron Rye is somebody who I had my eye on because I had Mab McNeely as the top debutant at the Masters, and I believe Aaron Rye is the one who messed that up for me. But yeah, the two gloves, man, we're betting on it.
Yep.
I like that.
I hate it, but I'll bet on it. Go. I'll do it.
Let's terrible luck.
All right. What do you got?
All right. Top fives. I have John Rahm.
Okay.
We talked about it a little bit. I mean, this is like the U.S. Open player, right? Mm-hmm. He's already won one here, obviously, but he's third in the world in data golf rankings. He has one of the higher course fits on here. Complete ejection at the end of the PGA. Yeah. I get it. I get that that scares you off. His comments after that, though, made me feel way better about that whole situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think 3 years ago, maybe even last year, Rahm would have had that kind of explosion coming down the stretch. Either not talk to media, or would have seen him throwing his clubs all over the place, mm-hmm. or just getting really pissed off while he's talking to people afterward. He came off the course and was talking about how much fun he was having and how much fun he was having just competing. So I think he's mentally in a very good place, and at least competitively, like, he clearly still has that juice if you fall apart at the end of a major championship and the thing you talk about is how much fun it was to compete. So to me, his mental game and his physical game are in really good shape. I mean, he just keeps getting top tens on LIV, I guess. This is a pretty chalky pick. I get that. He's one of the, you know, four or five guys who matter at every one of these that you have to look at every one of these major championships. But at plus 210, I could see him just really giving Scotty a run for his money if anybody's going to do it. And then the other one, Bryson, plus 150. We talked about him with your miscut. I just have a hard time thinking he's not going to be a big factor here, mm-hmm. just because of, like, this is, I heard some people saying, like, you know, this is Bryson's tournament. Let's relax. It's the U.S. Open. I don't know if it's ever been anybody's tournament, right. But either way, like, he is going to relish this kind of weekend, the attention he's going to get, the way he's going to be able to carry himself around as the defending U.S. Open champion. It's hard for me to not think that he's going to be very much in the mix come Sunday.
Yeah. All right. Then you got what, 10s and 20s?
Yeah, let's do some top 10s. I have Victor Hovland plus 410. Now, you could tell me Hovland's going to win this or he's going to miss the cut. I'm playing the variance game here. Mm-hmm. He's, as you said earlier, a guy that, like, you kind of just want to be in on because, you know, he said he accidentally won the Valspar. Like, that's how good, that's how talented and just raw good of a player he is. He's just, for whatever reason,
here's,
like,
my one concern
falls apart.
Here's my one concern with Victor Hovland at this tournament in particular. I feel like every ridiculous shot that we see from Victor Hovland comes from out of the rough.
Yeah.
I feel like whenever I see
he's always in some stupid area of the course. Yeah.
And that works at a lot of golf courses. It just feels like this is the one that it doesn't work at.
He's ninth on tour in strokes gained approach, so I think that's going to be the path for him, how he gets there. We all know what it looks like when his game's locked in. Week to week, you never really know what you're going to get, and yeah, you're kind of betting on, like, hoping you get it on the good side of that variance, but again, it's not something I'd love. I'm not going to have a whole lot of exposure on him just because of the volatility, the explodability of, I was trying to think of what that word was, of him. So if you don't want to join me, I completely understand. Like you said, every time, it's like, what the hell is a polar bear doing in Arlington, Texas, basically every time he's shooting out of the rough. And then I do have Ludvig. I don't love it. His game's been all over the place. I don't like being not invested in Ludvig Åberg. I think this is ideally a good course fit for him. He's such, like, a precise player.
Yeah.
Around the green is just killing him right now. He's losing strokes there. He hasn't been putting all that well either. But if Ludvig's game is, like, in a decent spot, which it kind of seems like week to week, it fluctuates, he's somebody who should probably be, sniffing around in the top 10, top 20
here. If he has a tournament where his putter's just hot, he's winning it going away.
I mean, it's kind of similar to how we talked about Scotty.
Yeah.
He's just not quite there yet. Still really only has that one big win that he got earlier this year. Mm-hmm. But, it's hard to think it's not going to happen for him at some point at one of these major championships.
Sure.
It's just a matter of, you know, how put together is everything for him.
Yeah. I feel like his first will be a Masters or a PGA.
Yeah, probably. That's kind of, you know, he was solo second a year ago at the Masters. So,
yeah. All right. What else you got?
All right, let's go to some of these top 20s here because we talked about Colin Morikawa. Weird year for him, but I think the approach and the fairway finder nature of his game is going to be pretty beneficial to him. The other one I wanted to throw on here is Corey Connors at plus 135.
Interesting.
Another, he really hung around at Augusta. I think he was leading it at a couple points, if I remember that correctly. T9 at the U.S. Open last year at Pinehurst.
Yeah.
A course fit guy. That's really the main reason. I believe he's the number one or number two course fit guy. Yeah, he's number two, only behind Colin Morikawa. A guy who his game translates well to a place like this. It does feel a little fickle to just say, oh, he's a good course fit, therefore he's going to do well, because if these guys' games are off by, like, even a little bit, all of a sudden you're having catastrophe in the rough. And then the last one, though, I do want to talk about, why the hell is Shane Lowry at plus money to finish top 20?
Ooh.
This guy was a 54-hole leader in 2016.
Yeah.
And he's
captain. His game has aged well, yeah.
Captain consistent. He's a decently accurate driver. Like I said, he finished T2 here in 2016. He's second in strokes gained approach. Like, this is the exact kind of tournament where he just plays boring golf the whole time, and then all of a sudden on Sunday, he's got a chance to win this thing. I was really surprised that you could get plus money on him for a top 20.
I like that spot. I like that spot by you. I'll probably join you on that, actually.
Yeah, but that's all I got. That's what my card is looking at.
Awesome. Well, good stuff. Love it. Everybody enjoy the U.S. Open, because Scottie Scheffler has called it the toughest course he's ever played. But we will hopefully be on the right side of a lot of these bets, maybe even sniff a winner or two as well. That's going to do it for us. We're with you every single golf major. We'll be back for the British Open as well about a month from now, giving you all of our favorite plays for the week. Enjoy the golf tournament, and we'll talk to you then.